From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland.
I'm from East Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, two blocks up from Haight.
Coming up, why some San Franciscans want to give immigrant parents the right to vote in school board elections.
We know from the data that when parents are more civically engaged, their students are more likely to attend school more regularly. They're more likely to be socially adjusted.
Then we'll see what the future holds for City College of San Francisco.
It is the longest running, slowest moving nail biter I think the state has ever seen.
And we'll hear how a local MacArthur Award winner is using toys to make chemistry accessible to the world.
All the components are printed flat on a sheet of paper and you get a fully functional microscope.
We're getting schooled today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Immigrants in the U.S. must be citizens in order to vote in general elections. But next month, San Francisco voters will decide if non-citizens will be able to vote in certain other elections for school board. It's Proposition N on the San Francisco ballot. Here's reporter Sarah Tan with more.
About 10 families are gathered near San Francisco's Civic Center on a Tuesday night in September, nervously waiting for a Board of Education meeting to start. They're holding signs that read, "Yes on N." But the catch is, many didn't have the chance to vote for the elected officials they've come to see. This is because right now in San Francisco, people without citizenship are not allowed to vote for school board members, even if their kids are enrolled in the district. But Prop N would change that for many parents. Parents like Lourdes Doberganes, who has four children in the city's public schools. She says, without being able to vote, she can't advocate for her kids.
Y yo quería que la sacaran porque no era buena maestra, perjudicó mucho a mi hija.
It was the case of a bad teacher, and as a parent, I felt that I should have the right to say something, but my situation didn't allow me to exercise a right to ask for the district to remove her.
According to the Mission Economic Development Agency, or META, more than half of the city's public school students have at least one immigrant parent. And policy manager Gabriel Medina says the right to vote could also help parents feel more invested in their school district.
And we know from the data that when parents are more civically engaged, their students are more likely to attend school more regularly. They'll be more likely to enroll in more academically rigorous programs, more likely to graduate.
Inside the meeting, school board members discussed Prop N and they unanimously voted to support it. School board member Sandra Lee Feuer is the motion's co-author.
We want our immigrant parents to actually be more engaged, to give us the voice. This is those students that actually have the most to gain and the most to lose.
So if the entire school board supports granting the right for immigrant parents to vote for board members, then it seems like a no-brainer, right? Well, apparently not. Similar measures have come up twice before, in 2004 and 2010, and San Francisco voters rejected them both. Howard Epstein is a spokesman for the San Francisco Republican Party.
Basically, we believe that voting is the right of citizenship. Prop N does not distinguish between people who came here legally and people who are here illegally.
He also says it could create a precedent for non-citizens.
So they're going to say, well, if we're going to vote for school board, why can't we vote for governor? Why can't we vote for president?
And anyway, he doesn't think the right to vote really affects parenting.
I think if parents, if they're good parents, let's forget their legality, they're going to help their kids with their schoolwork. They're going to be involved whether they can vote for the school board or not.
Over in Chinatown, parents at the neighborhood YMCA are taking a different stance from Epstein in organizing support for Prop N. Unun Che is a parent leader for Chinese for Affirmative Action. Though she herself is a citizen, she says many immigrants are not because the naturalization process can be lengthy.
The process of naturalization is very difficult. It takes 5 years before you can even qualify to naturalize. But their children are already in the school district. They're already enrolled in school. And this is a very basic right for a parent to have a voice in their children's educational success.
Non-citizens have already gotten the right to vote in school board elections in some U.S. cities, including Chicago, Illinois, and Cambridge, Massachusetts. And if voters say yes to Prop N, non-citizens will also have that right in San Francisco. For Cross Currents, I am Sarah Tam.
Find more election coverage online at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco voters have a few more education-related ballot measures to consider. Others will help determine the fate of City College. The embattled school once served more students than any other community college in the country. But questions about how City College has been managed led to a massive drop in enrollment. Now the school is trying to recover. KLW's Ben Trefney spoke with San Francisco Chronicle higher education reporter Nanette Asimov about what's going on with City College of San Francisco.
So I want to start with what all San Franciscans can have to say about the future of City College of San Francisco, and that's whether to vote to raise certain taxes to help fund City College. So what would Prop W do?
What it would do is raise taxes on buildings sold above a certain amount of money. And when that money comes into city coffers, there's nothing written in Prop W that says how that money should be spent. And that's intentional. If the city were to say you must spend it on City College or you must spend it on something else, the measure would require a two-thirds voter approval.
And the supermajority.
Exactly. And the way it is now, it just needs a simple majority. So what the supervisors did was to pass a second non-binding resolution saying that if the measure passes, then it would raise something like $44 million a year, I believe. They would use $13 million of that each year to pay for anybody in the city who wants to go to City College for free. So it's non-binding. We don't know how the money would be spent, but that's the intention.
So City College of San Francisco's fate is still actually somewhat up in the air, as the Accreditation Commission that evaluates community colleges is reviewing the school this month. What are they looking for?
Well, let me just say, I've been covering this for 4.5 years, and I have to say that it is the longest running, slowest moving nail biter I think the state has ever seen. And we are entering the final act, and we will soon see the denouement of this long running drama. Let me just say for the record, because a lot of people have been concerned about this, it's not about the teaching. Nobody has ever complained about the quality of teaching at City College. What they've complained about is all the support systems that students need and that a college needs to run. So everything from technology, the governing board, the administration was, and in some sense still is, missing permanent members, vacant spots. We have, even to this day, we have an interim chancellor running City College and several vacant spots. But the college says it is still much better run than it used to be. Library services, student support services, financial aid, the physical resources, the financial, do they have enough money? That sort of thing.
These all seem like things that any huge institution would usually need to deal with. I mean, administering better, essentially upgrading technology, making sure that everybody has support that they need. Has it been noticeably worse at City College than it is at other institutes of higher education?
Yeah, it used to be. And the way I've always seen it is this is such a set of good-hearted people that they've wanted to focus on teaching and instruction. And unfortunately, other things fell by the wayside, particularly during the recession, where there was an unwillingness at the college to cut and lay people off and shrink to fit
the needs of the students, and the college trustees and administrators say they really have had to shrink and cut classes and shift things around so that they are better meeting their students' needs at this point.
The Accreditation Commission itself that has been considering what essentially could be sort of a death penalty for City College as far as taking away its accreditation as an institute of higher education. There's been rumors that they maybe had a vendetta against the college or were not operating in a professional way. So the watchers of City College are being watched themselves, and they might themselves lose their authority.
Well, that's right. And now you're getting to the real crux of it, because here's the situation. Those accreditors have lost the right to do business in California. A year ago, the State Community College Board of Governors voted to oust this accrediting commission because they had lost faith in them. What does that mean? The state is looking now, but it could take a long time for another accrediting system, because right now, this board is the only accrediting body for California community colleges. And so it's going to take a while. So they still have authority over City College.
So meanwhile, City College has lost a lot of students over the last several years. I've seen reports that up to 25,000 students have been lost from City College. What have you seen?
Make that 40,000, because there was close to 100,000 in 2012 when I started, and now there's roughly 60,000. Many students just take classes for a few months at a time, rather than going for 2 years to transfer or something. But nevertheless, each student represents significant money, $4,700 per pupil from the state. That is full-time equivalent. You have to add together some part-timers. But $4,700, so that's a lot of money. And what City College is facing is what they call it is like falling off a financial cliff this spring, because there had been legislation to backfill that loss, and that's about to expire. And they'd gotten like $44 million last year. And this year they got $25 million in extra cash, and now they're going to get zero because it expires. So assuming they survive the accreditation situation, they are going to need to bring more students back.
Will they be able to do that considering their financial situation?
Well, that remains to be seen. They hope so. They're looking at things like Prop W, and then they're also looking at Prop B, which would raise the parcel tax another $20 per parcel, and it would bring in like $19 million a year, up from $15 million a year, the current parcel tax. And so they're looking at windfalls like that.
That's Nanette Asimov, the higher education reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle. She spoke with KLW's Ben Trefney. We've got more information about Propositions B and W. Those are the ones that affect City College of San Francisco. Find it at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Last month, four Bay Area residents were named MacArthur Award winners. That means they're geniuses. Each one will receive more than $600,000 to use at their discretion. And that's usually for the public good, so we all win. One of the recipients is Stanford bioengineer Manu Prakash. He's working to get a microscope and a lab in reach of every person, everywhere. He's doing it by scaling things down, way down. His inspiration? Toys. KLW's Angela Johnston visited Prakash and his team 2 years ago and brought us this story.
Despite the familiar song, no one is celebrating a birthday here today. I'm in a lab tucked away in the basement of a Stanford University engineering building. And the song coming from the tiny hand-cranked music box is actually, well, science. This music box has a plastic chip attached to it, a little silicone box filled with tiny channels of different fluids or chemicals that can be mixed together. It was designed by Manu Prakash, a bioengineering professor here at Stanford. When you crank the handle, the gears not only make sound, they are also triggering tiny pumps in the plastic chip to release minute amounts of chemical fluids, something you need to listen even closer to hear.
This is coding a specific chemistry that we care about. When I'm running this chip, whatever code was on this will get executed as chemistry on this chip.
As you turn the tape, more chemicals get released and mixed together. Prakash says these little boxes can be used for testing everything from disease markers to soil or water quality. Now, there isn't a water quality test or any test out there that actually plays Happy Birthday when you run it. A simple water quality test would actually sound something like this. Simply put, it's the sound of a ratio. One reagent or chemical mixed with half of another. Prakash's research assistant, Ben Alpers, explains.
For every one hole you punch in this line, you punch three holes in the other line, and every hole is one pump of that fluid.
The more complicated the ratio, the more complicated the sound. This way of mixing chemicals together, something called microfluidics, has been around for a while. But Prakash says it requires a lot of money and infrastructure, something that doctors and scientists in developing countries don't always have easy access to.
It's an expensive enterprise. What we wanted to do was bring out this idea of being able to do controlled reactions and handling chemicals completely in an automated way, but anywhere in the world. So we built something that doesn't require any power, doesn't require any electricity.
And it only costs $5. Building inexpensive universal scientific tools like this is one of the goals of Prakash's lab at Stanford. He calls it frugal science.
We've tested our instruments in Nigeria, Uganda. We did a small trial in Ghana. We are working in Cameroon recently.
But he has another aim that's just as important, fostering a non-goal-oriented curiosity among both kids and adults. He says that's something missing in science education today.
Because early on, kids get very focused on thinking about, hey, I want to solve this problem or that problem. So the tools that we make are completely open-ended. We really don't tell people what you want to do with it.
This curiosity-driven exploration is most evident in Prakash's other invention, the Foldscope. It's a paper microscope that's built by folding, like origami.
All the components are printed flat on a sheet of paper, and then you fold it together and you get a fully functional microscope.
One that you can slip into your back pocket. It's a tough little tool. Throw it off a three-story building or in the washing machine. Prakash has tried both. The Foldscope magnifies objects over 2,000 times. It can pick up subcellular structures like parasites, microbes, things 1/1,000,000th of a meter in size. Traditional microscopes of this strength cost upwards of $1,000. The Foldscope costs 50 cents.
Even though it looks like a simple object, it's a very powerful instrument.
At a recent event at Stanford's bioengineering department, Prakash's team distributed dozens of these Foldscopes to children. They could look at anything they wanted. Legs of an ant, strands of their hair. 13-year-old Jalen Devados and her 11-year-old brother Elias built one.
We were looking at little flatworms through a paper microscope called a foldoscope. I learned that you can see any kind of organism through just a 50-cent piece of paper and plastic.
I thought it was pretty cool because it only costs like 50 cents to make and it still works pretty well.
The kids are essentially beta testers, Prakash says. He has also created what he calls the 10,000 microscope project. Anyone who proposes a novel experiment with the Foldscope will get one. They received over 12,000 entries from over 130 countries, and it's still growing. They plan to ship 50,000 at the end of the month. There have been entries from award-winning chemists and biologists.
The goal is that, you know, curiosity is everywhere and every question is a good question as long as you're passionate about asking it.
And Prakash says the DIY aspect of these tools can bring a deeper understanding and empowerment.
So we enforce this idea that people are going to build these instruments, modify, hack, and do whatever they want to do on top of it, which is also the spirit of all the instruments that we make. And there lies the idea of making sure that you don't consider scientific instruments as black boxes. It's a great instrument. It's a great scientific instrument, actually, but you don't have any idea of conceptually what went in it.
Prakash believes that the world will be a healthier and better place if everybody has the chance to make a scientific discovery, regardless of where you were born, your income level, or your age.
Right now, 2 billion kids on the planet, we're not giving them the choice. We're telling them, here is a book, pass all these hoops, and if you qualify to a certain extent, then you enter the club for doing science, which is a broken model of how scientific thinking should propagate.
And because of that, Prakash hopes someday every scientist and every kid can carry a Foldscope or a music box chemistry set in their back pocket. In Palo Alto, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
That story originally aired in 2014. Last month, Manu Prakash was named a MacArthur Genius for his work. And that's our show for today, and we've got some geniuses over here, too. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Chris Hoff, Andrew Seltzer, Claire Stremple, and Beatrice Thomas. The show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Liza Veal. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. San Francisco's Prop Q has come to be known as a ban on homeless tent encampments.
A lot of people are going to run to the polls and vote because I don't like tent encampments. If you read the fine print, though, of course, you are not allowed to roust them unless you have housing, and you don't have housing, and that's in the law.
We'll tell you what the measure is really all about tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's local music is by Bobby Spider Webb. This Saturday, he'll be at the Jerry Garcia Amphitheater in San Francisco's McLaren Park. It's a free event and starts at 1 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hana Baba.
Look at here. My name is Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y. My name is Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y. Yes, I sing the blues.